Was?
Was?
We want to do this in German?
Someone's going to do it.
Budhe.
Budhe.
Say it again.
Intelligence.
Param.
Param.
Übergeordnet.
Buddha.
Buddha.
Wissen.
Wissen.
Sangstabhya.
Sangstabhya.
Indem man festigt.
Indem man festigt.
Atmanam.
Atmanam.
Den Geist.
Den Geist.
Atmana.
Atmana.
Durch klare Intelligenz.
Durch klare Intelligenz.
Jahi.
Jahi.
Der Sieger.
Shatrum.
Shatrum.
Den Feind.
Den Feind.
Mahabaho.
Mahabaho.
O Starkarmiger.
O Starkarmiger.
Kamarupam.
Kamarupam.
In Form von Lust.
In Form von Lust.
Durasadam.
Durasadam.
Gefährlich.
Gefährlich.
Please go ahead.
Übersetzung. Wenn man also weiß, dass man zum materiellen Sinn, dem Geist und der Intelligenz transzendental ist, O Starkarmiger Arjuna, sollte man den Geist durch klare spirituelle Intelligenz mit Krishna-Bewusstsein festigen und so durch spirituelle Stärke diesen unersättlichen Feind, die Lust, bezwingen. Erläuterung. Das dritte Kapitel der Bhagavad Gita führt in seiner Schlussfolgerung zum Krishna-Bewusstsein. Man erkennt sich als ewigen Diener der höchsten Persönlichkeit Gottes, ohne die unpersönliche Lehre als das endgültige Ziel zu betrachten. Im materiellen Leben wird man mit Sicherheit von lustvollen Neigungen und dem Wunsch nach Herrschaft über den Reichtum der materiellen Natur beeinflusst. Das Begehren nach Herrschaft und Sinnbefriedigung sind die größten Feinde der bedingten Seele. Doch durch die Stärke des Krishna-Bewusstseins kann man die materiellen Sinne, den Geist und die Intelligenz beherrschen. Man sollte seine Arbeit und seine vorgeschriebenen Pflichten nicht unvermittelt aufgeben. Vielmehr sollte man allmählich Krishna-Bewusstsein entwickeln und so durch stetige Intelligenz, die auf die reine Identität gerichtet ist, eine transzendentale Stellung erreichen, wo man den materiellen Sinn und den Geist nicht mehr beeinflusst wird. Das ist die Essenz dieses Kapitels. Philosophische Spekulationen und künstliche Versuche, die Sinne durch die sogenannten Übungen von Yoga-Stellungen zu beherrschen, können einen Menschen, der sich auf der unreifen Stufe der materiellen Existenz befindet, nicht helfen, spirituelles Leben zu erlangen. Er muss durch höhere Intelligenz im Krishna-Bewusstsein geschult werden.
Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasa Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This third chapter of Bhagavad Gita ends with Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, instructing Arjuna how to overcome lust, karma. This word karma means lust, understood as spiritual lust, that's one commonly understood meaning, and also a more general meaning of karma is desire. So either way it's taken, this material desire is the enemy of the living being who is spiritual by nature. And Lord Krishna here advises Arjuna, and through Arjuna everyone else, that by intelligence one should overcome desire, material desire. Intelligence, knowing oneself, but that knowing that I am by nature transcendental to, superior to these base desires, one should come to the spiritual platform. One should become steady and on the spiritual platform. In the translation, Srila Prabhupada inserts, it's not directly in the Sanskrit, but as he often does, Srila Prabhupada inserts contextual comment. He says, and thus, he inserts the word, by spiritual strength, conquer the insatiable enemy known as lust. So this lust or material desire is that which, as Lord Krishna has explained, it covers the consciousness of the conditioned soul, makes him weak. He becomes a slave of Maya. Hoya Mayar Das Kori Nana Abhilash. When one becomes a servant of Maya, one has so many materials, so many desires, there's no end. So one becomes weak, one's intelligence, as Lord Krishna has explained elsewhere, one's intelligence becomes splayed out. One becomes weak-minded. Even it might appear that one becomes, one is strong-minded. If one can, we say, a strong-minded person, who may they may be completely in Maya. There are many strong-minded people who are. And today also, to be a success in this material world, one has to be strong-minded, one has to be focused. But although such persons may appear to be strong, they are very weak before Maya. They are foolishly pursuing that which is of no benefit to them, and therefore they're becoming a material success as a great politician or a great businessman or a great sports player, or whatever it may be, is like the playing of children. Yeah, young children, they play. That I have become the president of America or something like that. I've become a great soldier. So when they get older, they can play in real life. But that's also not real life, because real life is with Krishna. So this is simply, they're playing, they're dancing to the tune given to them by Maya. Therefore, Lord Krishna advises us to steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, which means Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So, of course, knowledge, simply to know theoretically that I am not the body, I am eternal spirit soul, I am the servant of Krishna. That knowledge, like any knowledge, it doesn't become complete or useful unless it's practically applied. Just like one may be a doctor, one may be trained as a doctor, but if he doesn't practice as a doctor, then his having studied medicine is of no use to him or anyone else. So one has to practically apply that. If one understands, theoretically at least, that I do not belong to this world, I belong to Krishna, then one has to practice the process of Krishna consciousness, which here Lord Krishna says, steady the mind, conquer the enemy known as lust, and in previous verses he's talked about cutting the Maya. But practically, it's a gradual. In most cases, it's a gradual process. There's this steadying of the intelligence, becoming strong. For this, it is required to follow a process of sadhana bhakti, by following which, one gradually gets spiritual strength. It's practically seen that those who follow the process of Krishna consciousness, those who follow the basic activities, they become strong and fixed in Krishna consciousness by doing so. Often devotees ask that, well, how do we advance in Krishna consciousness? So many questions like this. But there's no real need to ask that question, because the process is already given. If we just follow that, then we get tremendous spiritual strength by making or being determined to follow the basic process of rising early in the morning, following the process of sadhana, studying the books of Srila Prabhupada, chanting the holy names. All these processes, they are vital links to the spiritual world. They enliven the soul and they concomitantly destroy Maya. And one's intelligence has to be fixed enough to understand that we have to do these things. And by doing these things, then gradually the intelligence becomes more and more fixed and clear. I was saying that people, their minds, they may be strong-minded, but they're fixed on the wrong thing. Even in ancient times, Hiranyakashipu, he was very strong-minded in performing austerities. He got a lot of power by doing so, but that was all in the wrong direction. But similarly, if one takes certain vows in Krishna consciousness, actually they're the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, one gains spiritual strength by doing so. The vow to chant at least 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, if one adheres to that, then by the mercy of Krishna, the clearing process takes place. Cheto darpana marjanam bhava mahada vagni nirvapanam. It actually begins to work. If we chant with the endeavor to give up offenses, then gradually the mirror of the heart becomes cleansed. What does that mean? That means that the material desires which are blocking or covering our pure intelligence, that I am the servant of Krishna, that consciousness becomes cleansed more and more. Even to start chanting Hare Krishna seriously, we have to have faith that we are the servants of Krishna. And by doing so, we become more and more fixed in that true conception that I am the servant of Krishna. So by chanting regularly, by reading Srila Prabhupada's books regularly, we get strength in Krishna consciousness. And all the points, by taking the vow to accept only Krishna prasadam, we may think, well, what's the harm if I eat something which isn't? But we have to be careful, because these are all essential parts of the Krishna conscious process. If we eat anything and everything, if we read anything and everything, if we do anything and everything, then we can't expect to get strength in Krishna consciousness. There are certain activities which are given by the acharyas, following which the result will be that we will gain strength to conquer over Maya. And if we don't follow them, then we become gobbled up by Maya. That's the term used, Maya Grasta, means swallowed by Maya. So this spiritual strength, it's a matter of knowing, as Lord Krishna says here, knowing that at least theoretically that I am eternal spirit soul, I'm part and parcel of Krishna, I belong to Krishna, and acting, if we know that, then we have to act on that. I'm part and parcel of Krishna, okay, well, alright. But then what do? Then we act in the service of Krishna. And what are the activities? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, hearing and chanting about Krishna. In the association of devotees, serving Krishna in the association of devotees, and focusing our whole life's attention on Krishna. If we understand that I'm an eternal servant of Krishna, everything here is temporary. Just like it's spring, the blossoms are there. We know it won't last very long. It's 3-4 weeks and the blossom season will be over. So everything in the material world is like that. We have our season too. We have this body and soon it will be over. Soon it will be finished. So understanding that we don't have any real connection with this material world. It's really, it really is an illusion. I don't have anything to do here. This body is temporary, but my eternal existence is with Krishna. Then by following the process of Krishna consciousness, we actually experience that, as Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukam kartam avyayam. We can directly experience how we are spiritual living beings, part and parcels of Krishna. We can experience the happiness of acting in Krishna consciousness, and how it is that happiness is altogether of a different quality from any kind of happiness that is possible to experience in the material world. That's why it's not an exaggeration when devotees say, Kita janma hao jata tua das, bahimukha brahma janma nahiyash, that I don't want to be even Brahma, such an exalted position, if I'm not your devotee, but I'll take the position of a insignificant insect if I can be your devotee. So it's not an exaggeration, because the devotee understands that even the most insignificant position in this material, actually there's no difference intrinsically between the position of Brahma and an insect, because both are positions within this material world, both are temporary, and both are positions of Maya. Of course, generally, Brahma has some spiritual knowledge, but the post itself of Brahma is just another position in the material world. But if one can be a devotee, if one can take to Krishna consciousness, even in a non-human form, as was seen in the case of Bharat Maharaj, who took the form of a deer, and then in that form he remembered Krishna, I'm supposed to be serving Krishna. So that position as a deer remembering Krishna was more exalted than that of a great king, in this, as was seen later when he took the form of Jarabharat. And Maharaj Rahugana thought that, well, I'm a big king, and there's this imbecile, strong, there's some kind of strong mass, strong body but no brain. He looked like some kind of like that. That's why he was captured by the dacoits, who wanted to kill him, because they thought he's like an animal. He's got a big body but he's no brain. But actually, he was the most intelligent. Even though it appeared he had no position within material, he didn't want to have any position. He was born in a Brahmana family, but he wasn't interested in the prestige that accrued to that. And he accepted a position of being scoffed at, scorned, just so that he could remain aloof from everything and everyone in this material world and concentrate internally his attention on Krishna. So he had tremendous spiritual strength to do that. In Kali Yuga, strength comes, Sange Shakti Kalo Yuga, strength comes by association. Especially in Satya Yuga, the yogis, they got spiritual strength by meditating individually, not mixing up, remaining aloof from everyone and everything, and simply meditating. But in Kali Yuga, we get strength by association. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that one twig can very easily be broken, but if many are bundled together, they're not possible to break. They all give strength to each other. So association with advanced devotees helps us to maintain our spiritual strength. Advanced, we may say, well, where are all the Mahabhagavats? Mahabharats may be difficult to find, but at least one, a devotee who has the determination to take to the process of Krishna consciousness very seriously, that association is conducive for advancement. At least if the intention is there to make advancement, then that association is very helpful. If devotees are trying, pushing themselves, let's serve Krishna more and more. It may be easy to just drop into sense gratification, but they're striving, this duravrata, with great determination, with having taken a very serious vow. They're very constantly, they're determinedly trying to serve Krishna to the best of their abilities and not making excuses to relax. Of course, sometimes it's called in fanaticism, but that's not exactly correct. Fanaticism means to pursue a goal without any real intelligent understanding. But if we pursue a goal that is worthwhile, then that is not fanaticism, that is good sense. Just like the training of an Olympic athlete, that might be called fanaticism, because you know, he's so, for years, he's so regulated. He's eating, he's sleeping, everything he does. His whole, everything in his life centers around the goal of winning that gold medal at the Olympic Games. His psychological and physical conditioning, everything. So it's a completely useless goal, but in modern society that is considered something valuable. So that's considered praiseworthy if one focuses his whole attention towards trying to win a gold medal in the Olympic Games. So people may say, well, it's simply fanatical to take to Krishna consciousness. No, it's not fanatical. It's the only worthy goal. It's the only, if we can understand with our intelligence. Intelligence means to examine and discriminate and understand what is best. So having intelligently seen the condition of this material world and heard from devotees of the condition of the spiritual world and the necessary purification of consciousness required to go there, then it is not fanaticism. It is intelligence to pursue the course of activities that will help us to conquer the enemy of material desires, which comes in forms like desire for gold medals and so many other things. To understand that the real goal is to come to Krishna and therefore do whatever is required to become purified and attain that goal. So that requires sustained sadhana. Just like the gold medal desirer. He requires a sustained endeavor. If his diet, his sleeping habits, his exercise, everything, psychological conditioning, everything has to be controlled day after day. Even if one day he just thinks, "Oh, to hell with all this, I'm going on a binge," and he eats 3 kilos of chocolate and 5 liters, drinks 5 liters of beer, and then vomits all over the place. And so that's going to, that's, if he says, "It's just too much, I can't take this strain anymore, I gotta do something different and just do what I want to do." But then his whole program of training is upset. And he's not likely to, if he does that, then he's not likely to maintain his, if he does it once, he can do it again. And he's also not going to get the same reciprocation from his trainers. They may, if he develops a habit of Especially if he develops a habit of just sneaking out every so often and gobbling down some chocolates, or then his trainers are not going to reciprocate that. We're doing our best to train you, but you're not serious about it. So then they lose interest, and then he becomes weaker. The trainer is giving him all, moral and psychological support and pushing him, and the trainer is one with him in his endeavor to win that gold medal. But if he sees that the protege has become lax in pursuing the goal, then the trainer also, why should I give myself? Why should I put so much endeavor in if this person is not reciprocating? So in the same way, if we don't apply ourselves to the process of Krishna consciousness, we don't get the same strength and we don't get the mercy from Guru and Krishna to remain strong. Ultimately, the principal factor in spiritual advancement is not our own endeavors. It's the mercy received from Krishna through Guru and Gurus. It's mercy coming down. But we have to perform spiritual practices to show them that we're serious about that. We can't expect to just, eat and sleep and watch TV and do whatever we like and expect to become Krishna conscious. It's not going to happen. There are do's and do nots. Anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam. We have to accept everything favorable for becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness and reject everything unfavorable. And if we do that, then we get strength. And if we don't, then we become weak. And that is true at any stage. We could have been practicing Krishna consciousness for 20 or more years, but if all of a sudden we decide, well, that's enough for this lifetime, or now I can relax a bit. Now I've conquered Maya. Anyone who says that is a fool number one. Now I don't need to bother. Everything. Now I'm an advanced devotee. Whoever thinks like that, they're already caught by Maya. Their intelligence is already compromised. And by relaxing our spiritual activities, we become weak. And we're in danger of losing our connection with the mercy that comes down through the parampara. That flow of mercy that comes by our constantly reaching up to get it. The mercy comes down, but we have to reach up to get it. If we're not looking for Krishna, if we're looking at Maya, if we're looking, what is there for me to enjoy in this material world, then the mercy of Krishna doesn't come. Obviously, it becomes compromised. So we have to be very clear, use our intelligence to understand that what is our connection with Krishna? Our connection comes through hearing and chanting. And I was mentioning about reading Prabhupada's books. Of course, there are so many books and in other media. Krishna consciousness is now available through various media, but certainly Srila Prabhupada's books are the basis for our Krishna conscious understanding. If we don't read Srila Prabhupada's books, then we're not likely to get a very clear idea of what Krishna consciousness is. I'm not saying that we shouldn't read other books. I'm also writing books. Prabhupada told his disciples to write books. That should go on. That is continued kirtan. But all the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, what it is, why we should take it up, how we have to take it up, who is Krishna, all that knowledge is given in detail in Srila Prabhupada's books. We have to keep our connection with that. Otherwise, if we think that we're so strong or that we can just now I'm strong enough, I can go here and there, or we don't hear about Krishna consciousness or receive Krishna consciousness primarily from Srila Prabhupada, from the Parampara sources. If we think we have to go somewhere else, we'll get some more intellectual angles on Krishna consciousness, then we're in a very dangerous position. And we've seen that in our movement, that even some devotees who were apparently very advanced and well-situated in Krishna consciousness, by relaxing their following of the principles of Krishna consciousness, and by absorbing their minds in other things than Krishna consciousness, they gradually became weak and their outlook changed. Now, we hear a lot of talk these days about bridge preaching and other kinds of preaching, but you have to be a little careful there, because, not a little careful, you have to be very careful, because we're talking about indulging in and presenting topics other than Krishna consciousness with the aim of gradually bringing people to Krishna consciousness. But the thing is, to present other topics, we have to become quite well versed in them. If we're going to teach them or discuss them with others, we need to know quite a lot about them. But other topics than Krishna consciousness, they can attract the mind and appear very absorbing in themselves, or they can present an apparent angle on reality that might seem, if we're exposed to that more than to Krishna consciousness, then gradually we can start to think that this angle on reality is the most important thing. Just like astrology, for instance, it's a Vedic science. Srila Prabhupada in his books recommended that, although sometimes he was not recommending it also. But basically, it's a Vedic science. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used it. Nanda Maharaj used it. We can't say it's outside the scope of Krishna consciousness. But if we become more and more absorbed in studying astrology, then we start to see even devotees, well, this one is a Leo, and this one is a Capricorn, and this and that, and without seeing their primary characteristics of them being devotees of Krishna. Or we may become so absorbed in, we may see a room in terms of vastu and think, well, this window should be moved and this and that, without thinking the most important thing in a room, there should be pictures of Krishna. And we think, instead we're thinking, well, the window has to be there, or the window, it's better to have the window in the wrong position according to vastu and plenty of pictures of Krishna than have it all super vastu'd with no pictures of Krishna. The point is that we may tend to lose our focus. It can be very dangerous. Or in the universities, and we hear scholars and they're very knowledgeable and it's attractive intellectually. But these scholars, for all their scholarship and for all, they don't know Krishna. They might even talk about Krishna, but their talking about Krishna is the licking of the honey bottle from outside. So if we hear from such persons, it can be very dangerous, unless one is very strongly fixed in spiritual practices. Even then, it can be very dangerous, because their outlook is subtly so different to that of the pure devotees who accept Bhagavad Gita. How do they accept? Sarvametadritang manye yanmang vadasi keshava. This is how Srila Prabhupada, in his introduction to Bhagavad Gita, tells us how we have to hear Bhagavad Gita to get the same result as Arjuna hearing Bhagavad Gita. Many people read Bhagavad Gita, but not everyone gets the same result as Arjuna, which is surrender to Krishna, with full faith in Krishna. Because Arjuna accepted, sarvam etad ritang manye, I accept as truth, yang mang vadasi keshava, everything you have told me. Keshava, Krishna. So if one doesn't have that outlook, if one thinks, well, by Sanskrit scholarship we'll analyze, or by sociological, or historic, or this is Hindu mythology, or whatever, the so-called scholars have so many different ways of licking the honey bottle from the outside, but they don't get the taste of bhakti rasa. They cannot enter into bhakti because they think that their intelligence is superior to that of Krishna's. That they are in a position to analyze Krishna, not understanding that we are analyzed by Krishna, and our position is to surrender at his lotus feet. So we have to be very careful to keep our connection with the parampara by this attitude of full faith and surrender and following the principles of Krishna consciousness and keeping focused. It requires to be steady, as Lord Krishna states here, sangstabhyatma, sangstabhyatma namatma na, that the mind should be steadied by the intelligence. Our intelligence always has to be clear to understand what are the basics, what is the essence, what are we pursuing. The basic principle that we are not this body, we are eternal spirit soul. Everything here is temporary. Everything in this world that is conceived of without a relationship to Krishna is simply maya. Ritertam yat pratiyeta, yat pratiyeta, yat pratiyeta, chatmani. This Lord Krishna states that yathābhāso yathātamah, that anything that is conceived, what is maya? Maya means anything that is conceived of without a relationship to Krishna. So by carefully following the process of Krishna consciousness, of sadhana bhakti, then we're always hearing and chanting about Krishna in the association of devotees who also have the strength of faith in Krishna. So if we continue to do that, then our intelligence will remain focused and fixed. But if we associate with other people who are not fixed in that conception, associate either with them directly or by reading different books that they've written, then we tend to absorb that consciousness, which is not Krishna consciousness, which is the consciousness of perceiving myself as separate from Krishna. And it seems very real. To everyone in this world, whatever they're doing seems real. It seems very real that Muslims should fight Hindu or Hindus in India, or that just recently, I'm sure no one in Germany has any interest, but recently the Cricket World Cup. Cricket is some kind of sport which you're probably not even aware of, but if you're in India, you cannot but be aware of it, because it's people are just like people are crazy about soccer here. So in India, it's cricket. So to them, it seems very real. And I was on a train. I saw the headline on the paper that a billion hearts are broken, something like this. I thought there must be some major disaster. That means a billion people in India. Something went wrong. What happened? India lost a cricket game. That's the frontline headline. Well, they lost it to a minor nation. I guess it would be something like Germany losing a soccer game to Iceland or something like that. But it's meaningless. But they take it. Asatyare satta karimani. What is unreal, they take as real. But if we associate with such people, directly or indirectly, then we tend to become influenced by that. Therefore, we have to associate with devotees, and devotees who are very focusedly, concentratedly, understanding that I am meant to serve Krishna, and everything else but service to Krishna is apaswarta parayana. Apaswarta means that which is opposed to my own self-interest. Yesterday I met one God brother, and he asked me, how is it that you're able to maintain sannyas so many years? And he told me, he asked various sannyasis in our movement, and he told me that one of them had said, well, his instant reply, well, I'm scared like hell of Maya. there's one motivation. That's if we're not Krishna conscious, then we have to suffer so much in material life. And that we can see. We can see devotees who, as long as one is maintaining spiritual strength by following this process, then one becomes bright, one remains bright and happy. But if not, then the same bright, happy face, we'll see someone, they'll wander into the Sunday program, we kind of recognize, but that once happy, shining face is now dull looking. It lost the luster because of the attempt to become absorbed in sense gratification. Although once one's taken to Krishna consciousness, those, however hard they try, devotees, they can't enjoy material life like a karmi. They can fool themselves that they can, but they can't. Even there's nothing to enjoy, I mean, you have to come back at least for the halava. there's no prasadam halava, there's nothing like that in the material world. You can try, you can cook it yourself, but if you're not following the principles, and it just and there's no fun just sitting at home and eating it by yourself. But in association of devotees, everything becomes full of life, spiritual life, blissful. But that we can't switch between. We may think that we can switch between Maya and Krishna consciousness very easily. That, well, I'll enjoy myself in Maya, and then I like the bliss of Krishna consciousness. I like the dancing and the singing and the prasadam, but I don't like all these rules. But then, if you don't follow the rules, then the bliss of kirtan cannot be experienced. So this dedication is required, and mind, intelligence, all these should be fixed on Krishna. It doesn't necessarily, even living in the temple, one can be mentally elsewhere. It's not, of course, if one is living in the temple, that's very helpful, because in any temple worth its name, they won't. No one's allowed to sleep after 4 o'clock. You have to get up. Just like one man was asking Srila Prabhupada that, well, I find it very difficult to get up early in the morning. So what should I do? Prabhupada said, come and live with us. Then it won't be difficult. We'll get you up. So that will help, but just like we were discussing, that there are cases of people who they're living in the temple, seems that it might be primarily or partially because it's one way to solve the belly problem. Maybe not so much in well-to-do countries like this, in which even if you don't do any work, the government helps you solve the belly problem by giving you some money. But sometimes it's seen like that people who they're more or less able to follow the principles in return for 2 meals a day, and to brush the floor a bit and do as little service as you can and eat as much as you can. So that kind of attitude won't help. Krishna conscious means sevanmukhe hi jivado swayameva spuratiyata. Krishna is revealed to those who are eager to serve. Sevanmukh means eager to serve. With that attitude, Krishna becomes pleased. Otherwise, the example is given, just like a fish may be in the Ganga River. But the fish doesn't get much benefit from being in the Ganga because there's no consciousness that I'm in the Ganga. For the fish, just a fish, that's all. He doesn't worship the Ganga, or the birds. The birds may live on the roof of the temple or perch on the temple. So some benefit is there. They'll, in their covered consciousness, they'll hear the sound of the kirtan, but they have no consciousness that the Lord should be worshipped, that our life should be dedicated to His service. So they're in the proximity of that which is sacred, but because their consciousness is not sacred, then the benefit they get is very limited. So here Lord Krishna is advising us to overcome the insatiable enemy known as lust. It's not that material desires, you have one or two and then you fulfill them and then it's all over. But they come one after another, one after another, one after another. There's no end. No end until we develop the pure spiritual desire to serve Krishna. So that requires to be strong, apply ourselves to the... Ourselves we are weak. We are not strong. But we can gain strength from Balaram, who helps the aspiring devotee who desires that. We can gain strength. Maya is much stronger than us. Daivahi esha gunamayi mama maya duratiya mayam eva yepa patyante mayam etam tarantite. We are very weak, but Krishna is very strong. Maya is very strong, Krishna is stronger. By surrendering to Krishna, by following the process of Krishna consciousness, we gain strength. No other process is sufficient to do that. It's not here it's said that we should apply our intelligence. That doesn't mean any mundane intelligence. The intelligence means the intelligence to accept and follow that which is given by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Anything outside that is a misuse of the intelligence. So, that example is given of the big elephant, big powerful animal, can be carried away by the flooding waters of the river. So we may think, well, I'm very strong, so I can indulge in this kind of maya or this or that, but maya will sweep us away. Whereas the little fish, which is it's not nearly as strong as an elephant, but the fish swims in the same current that carries away the elephant, the little fish swims against the current. How is that possible? Because it has taken shelter of the water. He's sheltered by the water. So if we're sheltered by Krishna, then even if we're very small, then Krishna helps us. Prahlad seemed very small and insignificant. Hiranyakashipu was very powerful. But Hiranyakashipu was destroyed by Nrsimhadev, and Prahlad was protected by him, because Hiranyakashipu thought that by his own endeavor, his own strength, he could conquer everything. Whereas Prahlad was more intelligent, and he simply took shelter of Lord Nrsimhadev. So maintaining spiritual strength, it's an ongoing process. It has to be followed day after day, day after day, day after day. If we relax that, we may think it doesn't matter, but it does. And gradually or quickly, our spiritual strength will ebb away. And we wonder, what happened? Why am I in such maya? Why are we? Because we're not doing that which is required to get the strength from Guru and Krishna to conquer over maya. You were asking about how to be strong in an unfavorable situation, studying at the university. Well, it is the whole material world is an unfavorable situation. One has to be very fixed on following Krishna consciousness as much as we can. That's true for everyone, whether in the university or wherever we are, whatever we're doing. That we have to make time to chant Hare Krishna. It requires time to follow sadhana. We can't have a mini sadhana process. We'll cut it down. And we can't expect that, well, I'll just chant 2 rounds and I'll get the same result as chanting 16 rounds. It's not gonna be the same thing, obviously. Or we can't think, I'll cut my reading down to 10 minutes a week or something, and we'll get the same result as reading an hour a day. It's not going to be the same thing. We can't fool ourselves like that. The more we apply ourselves to the process, the more it works on us. So, in general, we can say that we have to make time for being Krishna conscious. Otherwise, what's the use of anything, whatever we're doing? Any questions about this? Comments? Objections? Yeah.
I am talking about taking shelter. Mm. Also, so when we take shelter, how can we actually understand his unique position in comparison to other Vaishnava associations? Which are there? What's the advancement we make on the social abroad in comparison to others? That we're more fixed.
Well, at least those of us who've come to Krishna through Srila Prabhupada, which means directly or indirectly everyone in the modern world, if they fail to recognize the position of Srila Prabhupada, that in itself is going to be an impediment in their spiritual advancement, isn't it? How do you measure spiritual advancement? You can measure distance by using a tape, and you can measure weight. There are different devices. There's no bhaktiometer, or there's no such machine, but we can understand one is Krishna conscious according to his freedom from material desires, absorption in Krishna, and desire to serve. Srila Prabhupada was blessed. His desire to serve was such that he was blessed with the gift of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And even people, they may be in Krishna consciousness, just like there are now various branches of the Gaudiya Math which are spread throughout the world. But practically speaking, unless they may be in Gaudiya Math, but unless they read Prabhupada's books, they're not going to understand the basics of Krishna consciousness. If you don't read Bhagavad Gita as it is, how are you going to understand the basics of Krishna consciousness? You can talk about so many things, but there's the basic philosophy in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, practically speaking, Prabhupada is, if anyone is to be Krishna conscious in the modern age, they have to accept the shiksha of Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, if you just read other books without reading these Bhagavad Gita is the basic philosophy, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the non-different from Krishna, literary incarnation of God. So that we require to study these books. Prabhupada gave them. He was empowered by Krishna. Yeah, anything else?
Yeah, yes, please. I have here a question. It's in the translation of the verse where it says, Atmanam says the mind.
Mm.
And Atmana
by deliberate intelligence, yeah.
Intelligence, how can I distinguish them?
Between the mind and the intelligence?
Yes, between Atmana and Atmanam.
Okay, I'm just going to make one point which has got nothing to do with your question, and okay. I'll come back to it. As Srila Prabhupada pointed out, putting the books on the mat is equivalent to putting them on the floor, because we sit on them and we put our feet on them. So, that can be considered. How can we distinguish between the mind and the intelligence? Is that the question? Or between the words, Atmanam and Atmana?
How I distinguish what means mind and what means intelligence?
Yeah, but I can't understand whether you mean what is the mind and what is the intelligence, or why Atma is translated in one place as mind, yes, and another place as intelligence. Yes. Is that the question? You see, the word Atma can mean body, mind, intelligence, and God, and soul and God. So it has at least five important meanings. Srila Prabhupada translated this Bhagavad Gita as it is, following the commentary of Baladeva Vidyabhushan, his commentary, and the Acharyas, of whom Srila Prabhupada is also one, they analyze what is being stated contextually to understand what it means here. It's very interesting that in the Upanishads it's stated that Indra, the king of the devas, of the demigods, and Virochana, the king of the demons, together approached Brahma and asked that he teach them Atmagyan, knowledge of the Atma. So first of all, Brahma said that the body is the Atma. So you just do everything for the body and that is knowledge of the Atma. And Virochana, the king of the demons, said, very good, that's just what I thought, great, see you later, and ran off. And Indra stayed, and Brahma said, okay, never mind about him, now I'll teach you real Atma again. So it could be understood on different levels and in different ways. And it's not necessarily that they're contradictory, but here Srila Prabhupada has given us this insight. Just before this, a few verses before this, we have the verse Indriyani Mano Bhuti. No, that's not the verse. Indriyani Prani Ahu Indriyebhya Parang Manaha Manasastu Parabudhe Yo Budhe Paratastu Saha. So here the whole verse rests on the word Saha, which means he or it. So it says that, the verse says, they say that above the senses is the mind. Above the mind is the intelligence. And above the intelligence is he or it. So Srila Prabhupada translates this to mean that he here means the soul. The soul is higher than the senses, the mind and the intelligence. But Ramanujacharya, he translates saha here in the context to mean lust. That lust is stronger than the mind, the body and the intelligence, which is another, it's another, it fits Sanskrit-wise and it fits contextually also. It's another angle, could be understood either way. So this is Prabhupada's, the way Prabhupada has given it. I'm not sure, other acharyas, they may translate it somewhat differently, but the conclusion, the same philosophical conclusion comes out, although different angles may be illuminated by different acharyas. What is this? In the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, apariyaptam. What is that verse? Pariyapta generally means limited. Balang bhishmam. It generally means limited, but it can mean unlimited. So you can have an opposite meaning. Where is that? Yeah, here it is. Aparyaptam tadasmakam balang bhishma birakshitam paryaptam twidam etesham balang bhima birakshitam. So paryapta means limited. So aparyaptam tadasmakam, our forces, Duryodhana says, are unlimited. Whereas the forces of the Pandavas are limited, because the Duryodhana had more forces. But that's the translation that Baladeva Vidyabhushan gives, but Vishwanathacharya Thakur gives it round the other way. Can be understood the other way also, and both from a different perspective can be understood round the other way. Anything else? Yeah.
In case that we have a natural attraction to somebody, how we can recognize if there is a lust, or because can we also have more platform?
A natural attraction to somebody. Is it lust or is it on the pure platform? Well, when we our natural attraction is for Krishna, and when that natural attraction to Krishna is awakened, then we our natural good feelings toward all other living beings simultaneously are awakened. So natural attraction between living beings is only possible on the pure platform. It's not that we can have a pure attraction for someone and an impure attraction for someone else. Don't like that answer. Within, on the pure platform, there may be, it may be that certain devotees are more attracted to other devotees also. Just like the cowherd boys, they have thick friendships with each other, and many of them, they don't have that much relationship with any of the gopis. It's not that they dislike the gopis, but apart from Krishna, not everyone can relate with everyone else. That's a feature of Krishna, that Krishna can relate with every living being. Whereas, just like Bhishma is especially related with the Pandavas, he's not particularly related with Hanuman. So, we may have more attraction to one devotee than another, but a pure devotee, he is the well-wisher of... As Krishna is the well-wisher to all living beings, so a devotee is also kind to all living beings, all persons. You have to be a little careful there, because sometimes Maya can be very tricky, and what seems not to be lust can later turn into lust. And it often happens. It's just like... a brahmachari is distributing books, and one young lady is coming and inquiring, and she's interested in Krishna consciousness, seriously interested. But somehow they end up marrying, which is not purely on the platform of Krishna consciousness. There's some attraction on a lower level awakens also. So Maya can work like that. Maya is very tricky.
I know that you wrote this book, Brahmacharya. I was wondering, because somebody gave me that book, because I was supposed to be Brahmacharya. I did not read it yet, because I was thinking, it's a book for Brahmacharyas. How is it applicable to me?
This Brahmachari book has been appreciated by many Grihastha men and many lady devotees also, because the principles, the specific practices and mindset are there for Brahmacharis, but the principle, the underlying principle is that we have to control the senses and very seriously practice Krishna consciousness. That underlying principle is there for all devotees, and every devotee ultimately has to be a brahmachari, which means absorbed in spiritual consciousness and controlling the mind and senses, which is the essence of brahmacharya. That's why one can... A grihastha who's... Srila Prabhupada wrote that a grihastha who doesn't indulge in his senses is more than a sannyasi. He has the opportunity to do so, but he doesn't. He's more than a sannyasi. So it is But actually, this there is a difference, though, for brahmacharinis, in as much as Srila Prabhupada and the Vedic literatures always recommend that women get married, which isn't necessarily true for men. As Srila Prabhupada once said, all the men should remain brahmachari and all the women should get married. And when a devotee asked, how is that possible? Prabhupada said, that is your management. It's an impossible conundrum. Conundrum, you know that? It's like a strange dilemma. It's a dilemma of the material world. But, the psychophysical conditioning that goes along with a woman's body, it's better that they be married to manage that psychophysical conditioning. Without that, as Srila Prabhupada, I heard he said to one of his women disciples that she didn't want to get married. And Prabhupada said, yeah, you can do that, but it'll be... He didn't object, you can do, but it'll be very difficult for you, he said. Yeah, anything else?
Yeah, when you spoke of the athlete who's doing this program and finally drops out the sportsman.
Ah, yeah.
And I was actually thinking of devotees as me who follow the regulations. Do their sadhana, but lack the conviction somehow.
Faith is the basis. Without that conviction, how are we going to push ourselves to fight against Maya? And unless we have the conviction that it's worth doing, faith is the basis. Yeah, that's why I was saying we have to be very careful not to. It's not outside the scope of Krishna consciousness to read all kinds of different things. All kinds of different things can be used in Krishna's service. We have to be very careful, because just like Srila Prabhupada said, he warned about reading Time magazine. He said, if you read this, the material world will seem like it's real. So, faith comes from association with devotees who have faith, and by regularly, if you want to get that faith, then make a program to read Srila Prabhupada's books every day. But we can't expect that we can get that faith and that conviction and be strong in Krishna consciousness if we follow the program of pouring fuel into the fire with one hand and water from the other. We'll just get a bunch of smoke. So we have to pour the fuel only. Whatever we do in Krishna consciousness is beneficial, but if we follow fully, we get the full result. If we don't, then we get a partial result. So what do you want? That we have to ask ourselves, what do we want? Where are we? Where are we going? What? We're all going to die soon, so if I was to die now, where would I go? What would be likely? Where is my consciousness at? Or what do I want my consciousness to be like at the time of death? How am I going to prepare myself for that? You should consider seriously, because it's going to happen soon to all of us, as we're seeing with so many of my godbrothers. And it's just like so many just all passing away all of a sudden. And it's going to, I guess the rate will increase, because we're all getting older, not younger. We're all getting to that age where, you know, when you get to 60 and above, then passing away is quite common. So it'll happen to you too. So get ready. It requires thinking very seriously and deeply about the purpose of life. The whole atmosphere in modern society creates an illusion, especially in modern materialistic society, creates an illusion that We don't need to do that. Or even that to do that is a foolish waste of time. There are more important things to do, like go to football games and get lots of money and dress in fashion clothes and so many things. But real intelligence means to think very carefully and deeply, what is the purpose of life? How can I act in such a way that's really in my own self-interest? If we consider that, we can get the answers from Bhagavad Gita as it is. If we apply that in our lives, then we get the result of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we're just floating along in life, being carried away by our petty desires. Experience that?
Recently.
With no clear aim of life, or even if we do have a clear aim of life, like the Olympic athlete, it's completely useless. Even if the aim of life is to get lots of money, that's also useless. Even if the aim of life is to help people without knowing how to help them, that's also useless. You open hospitals and this and that. It seems to be useful, but it doesn't stop the real problem of repeated birth, death, old age and disease. Of course, opening hospitals is better than being a terrorist, there's no doubt. But in the ultimate issue, it doesn't help anyone. Anything else? Yeah.
In the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna said like, Krishna, you are the Param Brahma. Right?
Yeah.
The absolute. And after that, in the 11th, he's showing the universal's form. For me, it's much more easy that Krishna shows first the universal form and then Arjuna said like,
Well, it happened round the other way, didn't it? Krishna was speaking and Arjuna said, do you think you could show it, Krishna? So that's how it happened. Hearing should be enough for intelligent people. There's no harm in seeing. But to acquire knowledge, hearing is more important. Seeing is also that. That's another means of acquiring knowledge. But seeing without hearing is insufficient. Just like people say, show me God. We show the deity and say, well, that's not God, that's just an idol. Krishna was personally moving on this planet, and many people didn't recognize him as God. They saw him, but without knowledge, they